The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2014 Annual Conference, copyright 2014. If you have purchased this recording, you are free to make multiple copies for your school's use. You may not sell copies of the audio or post copies on the internet. Order additional conference recordings from this year's conference or previous conferences at store.accsedu.org. Find out more about the Association of Classical and Christian Schools at www.accsedu.org. Thank you.
All right. Welcome to the CTP4 Analysis Workshop. My name is Rod Gilbert. I'm the head of school at Regent School of Austin, and I've had the privilege of being there now, finishing my 11th year on the administration. And if y'all are ever in the Austin area, please plan a trip to come visit us on our campus. And you can even go to our website and hit a button that says Visit Regents, and we'll ask you a few questions. And then we will set up a schedule around the big heart things that you have on your mind. Like, what do you want to find out while you're visiting us? In fact, when you send that to our website, Mrs. Howell, who's here, is the one that actually looks at that information and sets your time up. And let me open us up in a word of prayer, and we'll get started. Dear Lord, we thank you for this time, and we thank you that you've allowed our paths to cross here in Orlando, Florida. I pray for each person here as they place on their shoulders the weighty burden of developing children. It is a burden, and it's also a lovely calling that as we work each day to the bone, that we know that we've done your service, and that you will bring the fruit in its time with each child. And we ask that you give us a sense of wisdom and discernment when it comes to numbers that float around children. Help us to be wise in the use of numbers and not just articulate children as numbers. And we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. So Regent School of Austin has been using the ERB for more than 12 years. The school had the wisdom to adopt it as its annual standardized test. And so over the years, there were many times, either just out of sheer exhaustion and busyness, we would take the tests, they would go off to the little Scantron company, they would come back, and they would do what Doreen said that some schools have to do, smile and file. Oh, we did it. Okay, we got to go deal with this other problem. All right. And so over the years, Doreen and I both, as colleagues, have developed a burden that if we're going to use the test, then let's really use it for the advantage of teachers. Let's find ways to capture the data so that teachers can get just another set of insight into the journey of these children that are coming their way, or ones that they've sent off to the next grade. And so with that burden, we were able to capture certain questions and patterns that come up. And so I'm going to refer to Mrs. Howell quite a bit in this. I'm the one that was asked to speak, but really it's Mrs. Howell's stuff, right? And so my funny story about that is Ann Sullivan in here yet? Oh, hi. Okay. Hi, Ann. About five years ago, I was involved with an initiative at the school of what we would call metric-based decision-making. Like, how do I capture the numbers at the school that are relevant and missional and learn from those numbers in a way that's helpful for me as head of school, just learning things? And so I called the ERB company, I can't remember which consultant I was on the phone with, and I said, I want to know how to capture the data and multi-year trends to help the teachers really see the flow of these major categories of how the children are doing. And are we improving at a rate every year that's reasonable? Like, we're not teaching to the test, but when we put the kids through fourth grade and they came out on the other end, is there some way to tell, did they learn something? Or did they learn enough or whatever? And so I was kind of stammering around on this. My undergrad is economics, so I love trend analysis and all that. And the lady was real silent on the phone, like this. It was this silent. And I'm like, hello? Hello? Yeah, she went, yeah, right. She said, well, there's this lady that we often quote in our office who really digs into the data a lot, and she's down the hall from you. Her name is Mrs. Howell. So you're proving yourself to be all the more a young leader. So why don't you hang up the phone and go ask three? True story. So I went down the hall and said, Mrs. Howell, help me. So the presentation that you're going to see here has really been a wonderful journey for us in learning how to tap into it in a whole different way. So some of my PowerPoint doesn't jive exactly with this, but you'll get the point. All right. So here's what we did. In 12-13, we asked the question, for teachers' benefit, how do we take the data and look for multi-year trend analysis for a class? Like, if this is your first year doing RBs and your scale score for writing comprehension is 220, you know absolutely nothing, right? It's like saying, what's the score on the World Cup game today? Well, the score's 2. You got to have something to compare it to, right? So if you just have 1 year of data, you really don't have anything. It's multiple year trend analysis. So we set on that journey in 2012-13. Then we were able to capture some of the data because we had so many years worth of the data that we were able to actually drill it down to teacher patterns. So Doreen would look at the data, we would look at the data, and then we could actually sit down with Ms. Smith in third grade and say, did you know that of the 5 teachers in our third grade, for the last 3 years, you've been the weakest at writing mechanics? And she would just look a little fear, and then they would always say, I knew that. The data just showed them what they already kind of knew in their heart and felt. And then our job then was to tell them, hey, it's okay. We don't hire and fire based on some simple numbers like that. So it's cool. You're in a vulnerable, safe location here. And or we'd go to the other one and say, you struggled in that one, but you know, for the last 4 years, your kids knocked the top out of quantitative reasoning. We just got to figure out what you're doing that's slightly different from your other 4 lovely colleagues, okay? So that was where we started that journey. Then now in 14-15, we're just taking deeper looks at each individual kid and teaching the teachers how to look at those reports a little bit more thoroughly. Okay, so here was the vision. To maximize a teacher's ability. By the way, if anybody emails me, I'll send you this email. I'll send you this whole PowerPoint, okay? So don't write all this down unless you want to. The vision was to maximize a teacher's ability to understand each individual child's strengths and weaknesses that can be detected by testing so that the teacher's equipped to respond with confidence and make every effort to see that the child's needs are being met and to demonstrate to the teacher their own strengths and weaknesses through multi-year trend analysis. That's a mouthful, but we had to get those kind of words out to the teachers to prove to them or detether from them what they hear in other schools, the fear of a national standardized test being used to pressure them into teaching to the test. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
All right, you're a teacher? You get that, right? So we would have teachers, we would be saying, no, we really want to dig into it. And they would look at us like, we thought Rod was okay, but now we know he's up to something. So we just had to keep repeating this over and over and over. This is for your benefit. This is for your benefit. This is for your benefit. Okay? So here's a little bit more detail. Multi-year trend analysis. By the way, right here, this is my daughter right there. Look at that. It's like a little Swiss Miss ponytails. I think they're just like the Thanksgiving chapel, so they're doing. She's turning, anyways, this is not a presentation on Katie, but she's turning 21 next week. Yeah. And she lives in Boston going to college, so. Anyways, and her favorite person is Mrs. Howell, too, so. Anyways, so multi-year trend analysis for teachers. We took the scaled score review. That's what the ERB people helped us with. And once we started capturing this data that's available to you, we had them come and actually look at what we're doing to verify is this really answering the question that we want? I'm going to give you some real practical examples in a minute. There were seven categories. I don't know if I can repeat it. Verbal reasoning, writing mechanics, reading comprehension, writing concepts, quantitative reasoning, vocabulary, quantitative reasoning, and math 1 and 2. And for some weird reason at Regents, vocabulary and spelling, it looks like we're cheating. Like, there needs to be an audit. Routinely, it's like, why are they? I mean, like, we have pretty good scores, and all of a sudden, vocabulary, it's like that. So we don't know why, but we're not going to try to, we don't know. So what we do is we look at for teachers, we give them summaries, we look for patterns for them, and then a key thing that we started tracking, and this is where the meat of it is we start calling them the class of 2017, 2024, 2025. So you've got a group of third graders, and we're tracking how well do they do each year, and is that group improving at a reasonable rate each year? That's a great piece of information. And we ran tests on, well, you always have a few kids leave. Like, we have 80 per grade in that third grade. So there are 80 children. We have 1,000 at the school. So those 80 children, they don't all come back the next year. Someone moves away, whatever. So there is a little attrition. Then you replace them with a kid, and it fills up again for us. We ran some tests of, it's not the exact same kids for the, you know, for the duration, but what we found was it was a statistical insignificant factor because they were largely the same group of kids. Does that make sense? So what we then looked at is the particular teams' patterns, and then we would teach the parents, and we're going to show you some practical ways that we teach parents how to use that parent report. We teach them about norms and stay nines, the gray bars and black diamonds, and I've got an example of that in a little while. That's what we call it. And okay, so let's go on. I'm going to get back to this part right here, this trend analysis for teachers, and eventually we're going to get back to the parent ed. Okay, so here was the question: based on where grade one class started, how well do our trends match to expected rates? And the answer was track multi-year progress in our grade-wide scaled scores. Okay, so we asked the ERB people. If a group of students, based on where they started, how do they progress each year in their scale score? So, like, in the five verbal sections, if the group of 2017 had a 200 scale score as a group, the year B people told us, you should expect that their next year as a group they'll be at 205. And the year after that, 210. And the year after that, 215. You get the point. Now, if they're really smoking hot, there are 8-point differences. 208, 216, 224. Okay. Now, the math ones are 10 to 13. Now, they've not endorsed this as the ultimate end-all. In fact, sometimes when we ask them, both of them have changed a little bit, right?
And
depending on who you talk to. So it's conventional wisdom with the ERB experts, and ask them at their booth. But we've held to this because this is how we were tracking it, and we're just looking for multi-year versions of it, right? So here we go. All right, so the sections, I've already said those are the five sections. And the bottom of my screen's cut off, but you get the point. Okay, so before I show you a little chart, this is what Doreen, I came up with. It was a lot of fun. So before I explain it to you, I grew up in Wilmington, North Carolina, Wrightsville Beach, North Carolina, God's country. Have you been there to Wrightsville Beach? Oh, yeah, that's good stuff. And among other things, we're known for being hit by hurricanes occasionally, right? So even if you're not from the East Coast and hurricane area, when you're watching the Weather Channel during hurricane season, you'll see where they show the eastern seaboard going up, and they'll say there's a tropical storm Larry down here around Cuba, and they'll say it's going to make landfall possibly next Thursday, Friday, and they show this little cone chart, and then it shows likelihood of where it might bump along and land. Has everybody seen that? Okay, so when you see the next slide, think about like a that class is a hurricane. And they're bumping along each year, and we're trying to give a general prediction of where they might show up the next year. Okay, so that's what this is. Okay, so in this reading comprehension, the class of 2015, their scale score was around 318 or so, and so according to the that 5 and 8 point progression. Okay, if they were to progress 5 points every year, that would be a respectable increase every year. And we would say, oh, that's good. Or it's telling us something. Or maybe for parents, it's saying, we're not ruining these children, right? We're not teaching to the test, but they're progressing at a reasonable rate. If they're running along that hot pink line, that's an 8 point clip every year. That would be a little abnormal to be doing that. So We're not trying to do this one. We're just trying to see where we are. And so you can see, you get the idea of that little hurricane tracking. Mm-hmm. And then, so this group of kids, we've tracked them from first grade all the way to eighth grade. And you can see they're we call it in the cone. And so when we show this to the eighth grade teachers, they go, you're in the cone. You're fine. You can learn a few things. You know, you inherited the children when they were here. And then they bumped up. That was a pretty high rate. Here, we see a little distinction there. And, of course, the teachers are going to go, oh, what happened, right? And then it's up to us, the administration, to, hey, it's multi-year trend analysis. For all we know, and this is what the teachers are afraid of the administrators are really going to look at the whole thing. I mean, if you look at what really happened that week, maybe two kids vomited in the classroom. You understand? And we as administrators aren't teaching to the test. I'm not reporting to some higher order at the state level that's looking at these. I'm the top of the food chain on this, is head. Our board really doesn't. I mean, Doreen and I show it to them every fall, and they're like, okay, we trust you. Okay, move on. All right, so we show you this one to show you that we're not afraid of those things. Like, we show these to the teachers, and now we get to play in it. It's like a good sandbox of, well, what happened? Let's just evaluate it. It may be that it was the first year of a new set of readers, you know, and the teachers get to play along with that. Okay. So, let me just answer. How do we determine multi-year patterns that demonstrate a teacher's unique strengths and weaknesses after we weed out the wide variety of variables that distort any 1 year or 2 years? So I said, you know, kids vomiting, or six kids, the grandparents died the week before, and or a group of kids. I'm sure this never happened with y'all, but these little bubble sheets, I mean, probably some kids just got on the wrong column all the way down. And Doreen can look at it and tell, oh, he's off by a whole column, you know. So we just throw that one out. All right. Any questions so far that you would want to ask me? Because I'm... We're still trying. That is such a good question. Okay, so to that end, how many schools are you consulting with in August on a variety of things?
Seven.
All right, so part of her role is going out there and helping work with other schools, so there you go.
Are there individual cone reports?
Oh, that's a great... Okay, her question was, are there individual cone reports? The answer is no, not yet. Is that a safe answer?
But there is a report that can on an individual student that you can get out of the database there for you, and it's just knowing which one it is and what it looks like. It doesn't look like the it is. It's more of a bar chart. If you have purchased TestWiz, there are some charts that you can get out of TestWiz that give you the same kind of information. And you can see it in the chart, and then the information shows you outcome.
But you're saying there's a comparative bar?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have writer's cramp and...
But
So we would get during this fall. What's that? The ERB people, yes. And I would encourage you to go to the national conference. We went 7 or 8 years ago to New York City. That was a lot of fun. And then last year, she and I were in San Diego at the national conference. And this year, it's in Dallas, I believe, or Fort Worth. Oh, Boston. Oh, it's in Boston. Yeah, so I'm going because I'm going to skip it and go see my daughter. But Dr. Peterson, raise your hand, Dan. Dan's our middle school headmaster. Dan and Doreen are making a similar presentation at the ERB conference at the leadership part. Is that okay? Right. All right. That's good. Okay. Let me hit the next one. Okay. So just annual. I'm going to keep harboring on this because once you get your teachers interested in this data, you can't stop them. It's like setting a fire. But I'm going painstakingly slow at reminding everyone, you've got to convince them that the data is for them, not overseeing them, okay? And once you win them to it,
they ask for it.
And Doreen, in her annual report last October, even had a slide for the board that was a bunch of hungry birds looking up, like a mom dropping a worm on them. And all it's, what did your caption at the bottom say? Something like, the teachers really want the data now. And we realized we had won. We had broken all the scary myths of misusing standardized tests to hurt teachers or to scare them or parents using the data in a way that's not helpful. And we now have a group of teachers that are just yearning. Like they're wanting, like where's the information? Where's the information? We thought once they know it's for them and it's part of their dashboard, they're going to come up with things of what to look for and how to play with it and massage it and all. So anything else with teachers? But I'm going to skip over to the parents because your parent community needs to be trained in what's important, what's not important. Okay. So, and who is in their first, like who's been doing an ERB 3 years or less, if you'll raise your hands. Oh, great. That's great. Okay, and so I'm sure you've effectively been trying to train the parents on it, but one of the things that we have to remind parents of annually is that in norms and stanines of how we define who we're being tested against, like if we were to drop ERB this year and go with, say, the Iowa, which is, I'm sure, a fine test, okay, according to what we see in our children at Regents, most of our kids would be at the 90th percentile, which all it tells us is we're all pretty good, which tells you nothing. It doesn't really, it may affirm, and parents feel good, check that box, smile and file, but it really doesn't show you where the weak spots are in your system. And so you feel good about it, but it's not worthwhile, in my opinion. Okay. So if you are less than 3 years into it, you've got some insights here on where parents were frightened, where if we did Iowa's for a decade and we're all 90% or better, who's familiar with like Garrison Keillor's Lake Will Be Gone days? Where all the women are strong, the men are good looking, and all the children are above average. The women are strong, men are good looking. It's great. So with your norms, You have to spend quite a bit of time teaching the families that when a child's taking an ERB, they're being compared to, I don't know, is it 50,000 kids in the third grade? I don't know. Population set? Huh? Oh, you can see it in the norms book. It's a lot of kids, but it's not every school in America they're being compared against. They're being compared against people that were allowed into that select pool, mm-hmm. Right? So it's an elite force of kids in a way compared to the whole nation. So when you have to help parents see, when you're comparing them against other academically aggressive institutions in the United States, you're going to have a normal bell curve, you know, that shows a much wider range. So the Gilbert children, that little Swiss Miss Mocha girl, she was in the she was over the years, she averaged day nines of fours, fives, and maybe a six. So that would translate in the 50th percentile of the nation. Okay. But being a dad that knows all this stuff, I'm like, that's great. I'm glad my daughter is in the 50th percentile when compared against these type of other schools. I'm very proud of that. And that shows me, and that's about where she landed in her PSATs and SATs and ERBs and all the other acronyms that we can come up, ACT and all that. So,
is there a statistical analysis of the comparative scores over time?
Mean from ERB over to
PSAT?
You know what? We've asked them, can we see them? And ERB people won't let us see them.
Okay.
But they tell us that they do those studies. So we're going to do our own. So we're on a one-year journey of Doreen digging through our SAT junior. She'll pick a number, PSAT. We're going to do our own correlative study because what we believe, our headmaster in our high school believes, and Dan and Craig are going to do this, is that we believe over time we're going to be able to predict where an individual child bumped along with those day nines, where this is where he started. It doesn't really matter where he started. Over time, we're going to want to be able to predict, based on what your child is showing us here in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, here's his likely cone in high school PSAT, SAT, for two reasons. One, to show the family where to stretch him a little bit, but also where not to stretch him, okay? Because we have a very odd phenomenon in America of college guidance that just works the dickens out of children and tries to make them become something that they're not, okay? So our high school principal wants to be able to sit a family down and say, based on this correlative study, this is about what you can expect with your child's junior SAT score. So you can go ahead and start predicting what are his stretch universities that based on that, what are his ones that he could reasonably get into or what are his easy ones, and kind of calm mom and dad down, even in the middle grades of, look, Junior made B's his whole life here. He's a great kid. Let's not try to pretend that he should be at Princeton in 3 years. Let's all calm down a little bit. Okay. So that's a multi-year journey for us. Does everybody understand that? Okay. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
All right. So Craig and Dana, that's big on their heart. All right. So let's go back. So on to with parents. Another one. I've got a little chart on the gray bars and black diamonds on the parent one. And then a short list focus means, and I'll give you an example of that. A short list focus of when a family gets their tests in June, they'll get them back. They got them with report cards on Monday. We've mailed out the parent version of the report. And then we have a little information in our report card packet. And they can go to the parent education button on our website. And you can too. And there are two. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
You like it?
I do like
Robbie?
It. Thank you. Yeah.
So Doreen did, what is that?
It was helpful.
It was helpful. So Doreen wrote up two slide presentations. And did you do the narration of one of them, or did your daughter?
Oh, I did the first one, but we got rid of that. My daughter and her boyfriend and my husband did the one that's up currently.
They're the voices. So Kara and her boyfriend are pretending to be a husband and wife. And she's asking the sweetest questions. So what does little Junior need to be working on this summer? And then the person says, oh, I'm glad you asked. And then the slide comes up and you see little school go more. It's cute. It's cute. But parents have loved it because it helps them unlock, you know, what could they, you know, because you're not wanting parents to get all freakish about this. We're not reporting. Like, again, you have to keep, we're not reporting to some state agency. My board has a healthy disinterest in this whole thing. They're just, okay, fine, Rod, fine. But this part is you're giving parents an opportunity to say, okay, we take this information and we go down to Barnes & Noble or a little Teacher Heaven or one of these, what little workbooks can you get? What, maybe the kid showed some weaknesses in fractions or something, and let's go get a fraction workbook to throw in the RV as we go off to the Grand Canyon. You know, and you want to help parents, because parents want to help. And this is a data-driven way to give them some things to work on. And almost always, it's affirmed by what the teacher already said. It's not like, oh, it's not a shock to anybody. But for parents that really want to see data, that's good. So we call this the Unlocking the Mysteries of the ERBs. So we, on our, do we still have these three C9s on our, on these groupings. The national norm group, we don't pay attention to as a school. It's there, and because it's a larger group, we look better. But we're not trying to look better. We're looking for information to help our teachers, right? So we only look at the independent norm group, and we're really honestly disinterested in the ACCS one. Okay, so I think ACCS likes having it, but do you ever reference that in anything?
No, because basically the norms come out through your plus independent schools.
Yeah, so.
Just because we're that kind of school.
And I don't want our teachers thinking, we want to be the best at ACCS testing. I mean, you understand, just like, we're all friends. That's not our point. So just letting them focus on these independent norms. Does everyone understand the word stainine and how that works in a bell curve? I could draw it on a board real quick. Would y'all want me to do that? Raise your hands if you want me to do that, just so you can see it visually. Okay. You have a question while I'm drawing?
Just briefly, it sounds like you administer them in the spring after people are doing it.
We do.
Yeah.
And there are reasons for using the fall, and there are reasons for using the spring. And actually, when ACCS moved to having a warm group, they asked us if we moved to mid-year, and I said no, because we had so much data for the spring that we would be starting all over again. But
yeah. That's good. You're going to have all kinds of free time to do more stuff. So here's this child, verbal reasoning, stainine, and she's a 5 in this norm group of these children. So obviously I'm not perfectly proportional, but you get the idea that most Americans are going to be in that 4, 5, 6. Yeah. So when you take an Iowa, that 90th percentile, most of our kids, if we were taking the Iowa, most of our kids would show up there. But in a normal setting in this kind of testing, we can see that is called the administrative summary, Doreen, where it'll show us each of these categories, and we're looking for those bell curves. So the bulk of our children, because we admit average to above average children, it's highly normal that most of our kids are in that middle range, right dead center where little Miss Moko was, right? She's right dead middle there. And if you have, I think it was 23%, if you have more than 23% in this bottom one-third, then that should be a red flag of you've got a greater than normal number in that very low category. It's just a red flag. It doesn't mean the wheels are falling off. It's just, okay, now we've got some real data to play with. Let's see. Yeah, and you. This is a board education thing, and a parent not a parent, because you wouldn't show parents that whole report. But a board could misunderstand that. And we, in Dorena, over the years, have seen a 28 or 30% in that below category, and we had to go, all right, we are not going to panic because we're not reporting to anyone. we're gonna mine this over a multi-year conversation with our teachers. And it doesn't mean the wheels are falling off. Do you understand? So this is that little, that's what that stain on is. So this child here is a 5, 4s, 3s. And we do see, how many of you use the ISEE for the admissions test for that? Anybody use that? We see some correlation with that. And so people, like this kid right here with those kind of numbers will do just fine K through 12. If I were to see a report that shows 2 years in a row, threes, a twos, and a one, in a fourth grade, I'm starting to wonder, will they have a reasonable potential to graduate from our school? Because those would be lower than our norm, right? Is it a guarantee they can't graduate? No. Is it, do we make a hard judgment call and remove them? Because, no. But we would sit the family, I sat down with the family 2 weeks ago and showed them over the last 2 years, we're seeing 2 threes, 2 twos, and the rest of ones. And it didn't surprise them. I did it really just to verify to them, because the child's grades were showing it. They were having him tested. But I wanted them to see, even in a national situation, I'm affirming the things that they're noticing. And so does this give a little bit more? So the word stainine, there are 9 stainines. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay.
What is this actual data that we're looking at right here?
This was clipped.
I'm talking about the independent school, those stay nines for those particular test rankings. Are those your school, or is it just a random school?
This particular came off of the students.
Okay. An
individual student. So the next one, this is where I've seen Doreen do this dozens of times, and where you sit down with a family and you say, if a diamond is outside of the gray bar, that means he's above the norm. If he's inside the gray bar, he's at or below. And so it sort of affirms them when you're sitting down with them. And this is on our website in that little video, right?
Yeah. There's one. This is an old report.
Oh, yeah.
Now say percent mastery at the top.
Yeah.
So it still looks like that, but it says percent mastery. You still look at it the same way.
Instead of points earned.
Yes, instead of points earned, it says percent mastery. And that go back to some other of the new reports that that you'll see that use that percent mastery as a way to interpret the data. Yes, please.
I've never seen it.
You have that data?
Yeah, occasionally it does get to there aren't enough students that can have this statistically valid norm.
Oh.
Specific content theory, because you don't have to take every content theory that you can choose.
Oh, that's true.
So, there are certain levels for a content theory that might be not as popular. And so they're occasionally, it happens very infrequently.
So we don't take the science, the new science.
And Ann has a booth in with the vendors. She'll be a great resource for you.
This is the independent form average, and what you're looking at is where that student compares to that independent norm average. Does that make sense? Yes, ma'am.
In Virginia, when we had called your office and all, we asked for the independent schools. Pretty much in Virginia, all the independent schools are the prep schools. And so that information helped our parents understand, okay, so Norfolk Academy that's been here since 1767.
Yes.
That's
exactly.
Yeah, the one of the things that we would say is, what do they call a cadet who ranked dead last in his graduating class at West Point? What do they call him? A graduate. I mean, he's dead last, the bottom of the barrel, but you know what? He's a West Point graduate. And so it's all perspective of who you're comparing yourself to. And so let's go compare ourselves to the other aggressive people and show that classical Christian schools can match up toe-to-toe with it, and that we as a movement have a DNA sense of humility and vulnerability, that we're very willing to go look at where we're not doing something. Like, we're not playing a shell game. James 1:17, every good gift comes from the Father of lights, in whom there's no variation or shifting shadows. So if we see weaknesses, that's where we go, wow, great, we found a weakness in the system. Let's go talk about it. This is what we get to go play with. And not do a horse and pony show that Doreen and I feel like we got to go prove to people everything's fine, because you know it's not. We're human. And to be able to do that journey and help parents see this test has a worthwhile value in the long run in the DNA of your school is of great benefit. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Cheer her on and don't bother with these test results. My goodness. Don't even show them to her. Yeah. Yeah, just cheer her on. Yeah, and if her parents come in and go, yeah, just say, God bless her. Yeah, because we don't attach it to any real value. I think where it would come up for us is we've done correlations in math placement. So when we use the data on a multi-year child going into like the current sixth grade teachers place the children into either grade level pre-algebra A or advanced, we call pre-algebra AB. So then eighth grade, that little girl would be in algebra as an eighth grader. So the ERB trend analysis for that girl with those low scores, 1/5 of the decision is the ERB data. The other four parts are teacher recommendation, overall grade in sixth grade, fourth quarter in particular, and one particular test, and the student interest and parent interest. So the family would look at it, we'd say, oh, we look at the math, the quantitative reasoning, the math 1 and 2, and we found a correlation with reading comprehension. Okay, so we have students that may show a little high in their grades and even ERBs and math, but they get through eighth grade algebra. When they get into ninth grade, there's much more abstract multi-step processes in some of the math. And so we'll have kids that'll start to take a dive if we put them too fast in a math track. It's like they bloomed early, but then when they started hitting those abstract things, their reading comprehension was what was causing the gap, not their math understanding. But so do you see how you would show that to that family and say, this is just a data point. It's 1/5 of our conversation. So based on teacher recommendation, let's go forward. But we're going to keep a long-term eye on it. And does that make sense? It allows it to have a proper place in your conversation, but not a dominant place right here.
Last year you mentioned something like you have to have a certain number for this to give you good data. And we only have one class in grammar school.
Yeah.
What do you do when you don't have enough data?
Well, I think the smaller data set, the less stock you put in it is a basic premise. I'm not a statistician by training, but I would have Ann ask that question. Is that good? I'll give it part of whatever they're paying me, huh? Yeah, so, you know, let's say that you have a situation where, okay, you have 10 kids, and they happen to stay together all 7 years. Well, that's a pretty good data set. If you have 10 kids, but by the time they get to 8th grade, 9 out of 10 are different, you would still look at their individual little journey, but when reporting to yourself or to your board, you would say, look, there have been such turnover, that's not reliable data. So we're not gonna pretend like it, and it is what it is. And not make it, do not be beholden to it. Yes, Ann? Yeah. So from a curricular standpoint, that question and that question is why 5 years ago, Doreen, I felt convicted that the particular math curriculum we were using was causing kids to make great grades, but they were losing out on the abstract stuff when they got them. So we switched over to, we're now, it's a Math and Focus is the name of it. And it's a harder curriculum. But part of it is they're not allowed to just memorize something in the short term, get a check off and go. It does drive toward that larger quantitative reasoning long term. And now we're starting to see, after 5 years of mistakes that I made as head and implementation, that I learned lessons of major curricular overhaul. You would say that. Yeah, we had our eyes were too big for our appetite, but that's okay. We make mistakes and move on. But what we're seeing now in the data, and Doreen showed this to me just a week or two ago. Showed Dan and I, we're starting to see where I don't have it to pull up, but I'll describe it to you. Where, and we exposed this to our board, and they're like, what? What does that mean? On the math one and two section, we had many years in a row most classes. The math 1 and 2 was up here consistently, most of the grades. And the quantitative reasoning, the harder, longer-term abstract stuff, was down here. And, you know, we have 10 years of data showing it. And this gap was concerning. Now, we had already adopted the Singapore Math and Focus stuff, so then it became the question of, okay, in 5 or 6 years, when will we start to see this at least being in the middle of the cone? Because it's odd to have a lot of kids, hundreds and hundreds of kids, high on math 1 and 2, or even up here. And we were consistently at or below that blue line. And that was what our 9th grade
math teachers were saying was they're getting the basic process of the math, but they have no idea what's going on inside that math problem. They have no idea. So we're just now seeing, after 5 years of implementing it, where, you know, if you change curriculum, if we're doing this, we saw our quantitative and math score in several of the grades go just nosedive. And it's like, just hold on. And now, and the reading to this great report, we're seeing it go like that. And some grades went like this, just nosedive for a couple of years. And then it went like this. Like, first grade looks like they're all cheating. I mean, it's like a rocket, and I don't even know what they're, you know.
I don't know what they're doing.
We just told them.
Keep doing it.
But what we're seeing is that trend back up. But overall, as the DNA of the school is, we're using this information with the teachers, and now we're seeing both of those come into closer alignment. And we think this is why our ninth grade math teachers are saying the kids are just coming in more prepared. They just have a better concept of what's going on in math. Okay, David, do you have a comment or question? Or?
Well, I was just going to comment. We ran into the same situation with some kids who were really good students.
Oh,
not scoring well in the interview. But we found through some analysis of just comparing grades and DRB scores, like our scattergram.
Oh.
That our teachers weren't assessing very well.
Okay.
They were assessing a dutifulness.
Yes. Actual mastery of skills. Right. And so
we've run into that as well.
We run into
conversation point. So how do we know that we're assessing the way it's going to give us that, the kind of data that we're
and grammar school. It's a question. It's a philosophical thing about assessment with children. So like in our grammar school, the teachers tend to be more tender because they're all a little above average, and that little girl's just cute as a button. I just can't give her an F. And I know this firsthand. Katie was a fourth grader, and Lara Justice was a new teacher, and she called our home one night and was about to cry on the phone because she had made... Katie had made two Fs in a row on her fourth grade test and was supposed to get a really good, solid, like 58 for the third quarter. And Mrs. Justice, knowing I was head of upper school, so she's probably a little scared of me, called and said, "Can I just give her the C-, Mr. Gilbert?" To which my wife listening, what do you think my wife said? "You give her the C-. Man, that was a long night, and because you know what I did, a principal base, buddy, and I went, "Give her the F, it'll be okay." Everybody's crying. Laura on the phone's crying, sweet teacher, you know, my wife's crying, I'm on the couch, it was a lot of fun, and Katie the next week, F, and my daughter's like Anna Green Gables, "I'm in the depths of despair," you know. And but this spring she took a class at Harvard on ancient Greek taught in Euclidean Greek, translating Euclid's elements. So it works. So I use that F as to my wife. "See, I told you so." All right, but the grade inflation is a DNA question. Your school there's a nobility to it, and it takes administration you've got to coach the teachers. No, we really do need to see some lower grades to demonstrate to the family. Please don't sugarcoat this. Let's be honest. And then we've got something to work on. And then you got to be real tender about that. But I always appeal to the nobility of the teacher. At a nobility of spirit, you're trying to soften this. But think about this child in fifth grade when the fifth grade teacher's saying, she's on a second grade reading level. So your nobility is true. Let's place it on this little girl's journey 3 years into the future with that mentoring teacher. So we have some teachers where we have to say, "No, you're just grade inflating, and let's bring that down."
Well, then we have measures in place to watch the grade inflation.
Yeah.
And those are easier because they don't have to compare DRBs to actual grades.
Yeah.
What we found was that
Oh.
Overvaluing the beautiful.
Oh. Higher percentage for hard work.
Right.
Sweat equity.
Work always done.
Oh, yeah. It was, okay, so you, even your rubric of how you gave it came out with a false positive. If everything's neat and tidy, that's 60% of that grade on the report card. 40% hides the fact that the child failed a lot of tests. All right, is there a question in the back or comment? Yes. This is the answer is no. Not at all. Here's why. We have a data crazed society. And if I give them one smidgen of we don't even have any of this on the website, okay? We don't show the families any of this. Okay? And I have many, imagine Austin, Texas, in the shadow of Dell software, and golly, it's a data-driven culture. And I just tell them, no. And I just say, our data is fine. Now, if a family wants to believe or some myth, or they say, we've heard that we used to deal with this a number of years ago. People say, yeah, we've heard our reading comprehension's down. They don't have a clue what they're talking about. I mean, only two of us saw the data, right? We would say, well, come in and visit with me. And I've done this probably 20 times in the last 4 years. I would pull this exact one up, and I would teach the family how thoroughly we are studying the trend analysis, far more than they would have ever imagined in their lives. And then I'll just draw my napkin. I'll say, well, let's just go look at one. So I'll go find the one for their child, and I'll just pick one of these cones and just sort of draw it out and say, see, they're doing fine. And then they say, well, why don't you just show this out to build the credibility of the school? And I'll say, for every good piece of data to build credibility, I'll have a piece of data where the parent, unfortunately, the parent community who's not looking at this year after year after year could misuse this in a way that's unhealthy. Like, we really believed in this math and focus thing, the philosophical structure of it. But can you imagine if I was in the habit of showing all these cone reports? I mean, we're the professional educators, and we know that when you change a curriculum, you're going to see a bit of a nosedive. But we're looking for the larger picture, and all these children were fine, But a community that would have access to all of that, I think that's, in my humble opinion, that is misappropriated transparency. Like, I'm highly transparent at the school, more than a lot of other people. But that's a piece of data that I would almost equate to teacher salaries. Or could you imagine us releasing the data and someone being able to deconstruct it backwards and figure out which teacher's the weakest at writing mechanics over a four-year series? I mean, okay, so the teacher may be a little weak in that, but she may be the best when the child is going through grandma dying, or she may be the best when that girl's cutting herself and has gone through a therapist, or a little seventh grade girl post-puberty going through an eating disorder because her ballet coach is telling her to. So I'll take a teacher that's going through those things and us coaching her, hey, these are writing mechanic things that we can specifically coach you on the next few years. But you're a solid contributor to what we're doing. For the love of God, I'm not going to give that data and let a family misappropriate that information. Have I said it about as strongly as I can? So if I were to, and we've played with this sometimes, I would find some way to take some kind of composite of all tests in the year 13-14. And we've done some of these, played with it, where you see these two pink lines or whatever, and you see this sort of 50 little waves, and maybe one snapshot of, and at the bottom it would say, I told you we're okay. I mean, we're just not going to, okay, does that answer your question? So I'm pretty emphatic about it, and I'm begging you to be very careful with releasing that information. Yes?
On a lighter note, he was always the one that got the answers the first. And yet, he was on
And you know why he did it? Because he's a normal third grade boy.
Exactly.
God bless him. They're children.
We had one who was drawing pictures of
ducks. He turned out okay, too. Look, let me know this. Thank you for what you do on behalf of children and families. It is a burden that you bear to mentor children each day. And when you add to it the academic skill sets that you're trying to push into them each day, you are often going to be misunderstood. And I beg you to just work hard at teaching the families what you're trying to do and win them into your partnership. And don't over time succumb to a more cynical approach to the way the families sometimes will come at you kind of hard. Find ways to go, you know what, the way that you're asking it is hard, but what you're asking is, how do you partner with me? And so go the extra mile of teaching your families and do be long-suffering in their multiple-year journey of where sometimes they get afraid and get nervous. Be very long-suffering with them. We have many veteran families that think that, like I had one mom, I had a new mom, a first grader, in a parent meeting this spring in front of 50 other families. She said, "Mr. Gilbert, where do we go online to do private tutorials to make sure that my daughter can do the best she could possibly do on the second grade ERB test?" And before I could get it out of my mouth, and I was going to say it in a real nice way, like, don't do that to your child, I had two moms in the room who have kids that have, they have a little young one, but they have a couple that are in college, and they spoke up, and it was something like this: "You are asking exactly the same question we did in 2003, and it didn't matter at all. By the time you get through puberty, you won't even care about this. So just hang on for a long ride. And calm down." All right, Lord bless y'all. Have a wonderful day.